This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's nearly a year since Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 disappeared. And despite an international rescue operation, no trace of it has emerged. We have in the studio with us Jeremy Joseph, who's the transport, who is a transport and aviation law expert. And he's going to go through with us the legal issues surrounding MH370. Welcome to the show, Jeremy. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Mira, and thank you for having me.
Jeremy, MH370 was officially declared an accident. 239 passengers and crew are presumed to have lost their lives. And this conclusion, of course, has sparked a myriad of responses. What, in your opinion, was the reason for this official conclusion to declare the incident an accident?
Well, Mira, when a plane is actually still missing, as it is the case here, and obviously the passengers are also still missing, then generally the presumption of death doesn't automatically arise. You would actually, in a case where there's a missing type of scenario, missing person type of scenario, you would actually have to wait 7 years under the law before such a presumption can be made. But, in this case, without a death certificate, for example, being issued, then the difficulty here would be the next of kin would face difficulties trying to get access to their loved ones' finances and having to deal with life insurance and compensation and things like that.
But I can actually understand. I mean, as a next of kin or family, I mean, you want some answers,
yes,
right? And by declaring an accident, it's sort of... It sort of brings closure when there is actually no closure. If the family members, do they have any other avenue to challenge this official reason given?
I think that it's not so much of a challenge. I mean, I can understand the families being extremely emotional about the whole thing. There is a sense of hope, you know, and maybe there's not been any closure. But I think the intentions behind why the government actually declared it as an accident was good, in a sense that they wanted the families to receive some kind of compensation under the law, and it would be a requirement under the law for it to be declared an accident in order for it to move to the next stage, which is compensation.
Okay, and, you know, the government had good intentions, as you mentioned, trying to be helpful so that compensation claims can be made. But I understand that according to our Malaysian law and what you have said this just now, if there is no conclusive proof of death, families may have to wait up to 7 years before applying to the courts for a death certificate. Have there been incidents in the past, similar incidents in the past, in which this had to be done?
Well,
i.e. families had to wait for 7 years.
Well, that would be the general position, because a missing person, you know, doesn't necessarily a person who's gone missing means that he's dead. So that would be the general position. But, you know, you'll recall that there were incidents in the past, like the 9/11 incident in the U.S. and the tsunami of 2004, a lot of people lost their lives. And I think that there were also cases of missing persons as a result of those accidents. I mean, the bodies were never recovered. You know, it was a case of missing. So in those kind of circumstances, they actually made an exception to shorten the period, or at least get the death certificate much earlier than what the statute would have allowed.
Okay, so but the general rule is 7 years.
7 years,
okay.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, can death certificates be issued now for those who are on board MH370?
Yes, I made to understand that the National Registration Department are issuing the death certificates once you get a court order, and that would be the position, yes.
Okay. What about prior to this declaration? Would family members or next of kin on board 370, would they have been able to access, for an example, bank accounts or EPF accounts, pensions, for an example? Would family members have been able to do that prior to this declaration?
Well, prior to this declaration, there would have been some uncertainty about the scenario. Right, they could have gone to court, and there would have been enough circumstantial evidence based on what news they have already been fed to go to court, and perhaps in those circumstances, the court might have given it. But I'm not aware of any cases as such. But certainly, with the declaration, it is easier now. But since your question is prior to the declaration, whether it would have been able, they would have been able to do it. in cases where they have not actually gone to court and got such an order, it would not have been possible. Yeah.
What about salaries of those on board? Would families have received salaries from employers of those on board MH370?
Those would be a matter between the employers and the families. I would have thought that, because they've gone missing, technically or legally speaking, the employment contract would have been terminated. You know, it cannot be performed anymore. So it would be a matter of policy and how they deal with the severance packages and how they want to compensate the families. That would be a matter strictly between the employer and their families.
Okay. What about those with a will? Can that will be executed?
Well, it can only be executed when the person's death is registered. So once the National Registration Department issues such a certificate, then...
Which is the death certificate.
Yeah, the death certificate. Then it can be used to execute a will, yeah.
Okay. Have you had experience with anyone in relation to MH370? What have been some of the challenges?
Well, I've had some people who came over for some legal advice and things like that, and they've been asking me similar questions like what you're asking as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that many of them are reluctant to go to court at the moment because they want to see what has been offered by the airlines, and then they want to see whether they can negotiate. But some of the feedback I'm getting is that they've been waiting a long time and they've not really... been able to get to the stage where compensation was really, you know, in black and white offered to them. It's more like promises. But I think that was before the government made the declaration, so I'm not so sure about the position now.
Okay, because declaration was just made late last year.
Yes.
Does the term accident in any way denote negligence on any of the parties involved in the disappearance?
Well, the term accident does not immediately place fault on the airlines or Boeing for that matter or any related party. It's actually more of the start of the compensation process. Fault of the parties may be determined as with evidence. For example, if they did locate the plane and they did get the black box or some kind of evidence to show proof that the damage or the loss happened as a result of the omission of the airlines or maybe their servants or agents with the intent to cause damage, or they were reckless in some way with the knowledge that perhaps knowing that this damage would result, then that would be a very different scenario.
Okay, so in this case, it does not really apply.
No, it does not.
How do you work out which compensation law applies, and what would this depend on?
Well,
is it clearly outlined in the Malaysian statute?
Yes, Malaysia is a signatory to the Montreal Convention, 1999, that is. It has been brought into force through the Carriage by Air Act 1974, which was amended in 2007. So the Montreal Convention actually deals with the compensation for cases like this. It deals with death or even loss of luggage for the matter or any other assets on board the flight. So there is automatic compensation which has already been stipulated in the Montreal Convention of what is called as 100,000 SDRs or special drawing rights. But if you were to convert that, you know, it fluctuates according to the daily rates, but it's roughly around 175,000 US for per passenger.
So will next of kin of MH370 fall under the Montreal Convention?
Yes, they would, yeah.
And so what does that mean for them?
Well, in a sense that they would be entitled to make a claim against the airlines. It would be a requirement under the law for the airlines to pay that amount to the families. Of course, if they were to go to court and fight it out and things like that, depending on how the court looks at the whole matter, but certainly, according to the statute, according to the convention, international law, they're entitled to that sum.
Okay, but which has precedence, the Malaysian law or the Montreal Convention?
Well,
and is the Montreal Convention binding in Malaysia?
Yes, it is. Yes, the court is likely to follow the what the Montreal Convention says. Of course, the convention also allows the court to award for reasonable costs for litigation, but that's something that is allowed here as well. It's only in a scenario where there is evidence to show that perhaps the airlines were reckless or they knew in some way that such loss or damage would result, then those limits of what I mentioned earlier about 175,000 could be a lot more. You know, it could be those limits could be what I would term as broken, and they may be entitled to a lot more.
Okay, it sounds very subjective, isn't it, Jeremy? At the moment,
it is, because we haven't found the aircraft, and so it's very speculative about what the cause of the loss is. We don't know what actually happened. Who is behind it? Was it because of the pilot? Was it because of some conspiracy theory or whatever, or maybe it's at the bottom of the ocean? We don't know. Yeah. So we really don't know who is at fault.
Hence the reason we call it unprecedented.
Yes, that's right.
We are discussing the legal issues surrounding MH370. Jeremy Joseph, transport and aviation law expert in the studio with us, trying to, you know, take us through some of the legalities of this disappearance. Up next, I'll find out more about international law, the Montreal Convention, and what that really means a little more in detail on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It will be 1 year since the disappearance of MH370 this coming Sunday, the 8th of March. And we are trying to get our heads around legal issues surrounding the disappearance of MH370. Jeremy Joseph, a transport and aviation law expert in the studio with us, helping us understand the legalities. I'll be honest, Jeremy, I mean, when it comes to the law, it's probably the toughest area in which I find, you know, to understand or get my head around. Yeah. The language that is used is not really for the layperson.
That's why we have a job.
I know, exactly. And you will always have a job because of the language that they use.
Yeah.
I've read on a law firm's website that the Montreal Convention, 1999, which governs most aviation accidents, would provide for a few things. And firstly, that an airline is strictly liable for the accident. And what does that mean?
Well, strict liability means that regardless of fault, the airlines will be responsible to compensate the victim.
And this is purely on it's a legal term.
It's a legal term, yeah. It's actually in the Montreal Convention itself, all right? And I mentioned earlier that the limit would be about $175,000, thereabouts, okay? The actual figures may vary according to the day. Now, just because the airlines has or is planning to compensate the victims or in the process of compensating the victim, it does not automatically mean that they are accepting any fault. It's only in a scenario where the airlines is found to have caused the damage or to have done something which resulted in the act or omission of the carrier. And that also includes their servants or agents, and the airlines acted recklessly with the knowledge that the damage would result. Then those limits can be broken, and in those kind of scenarios, the airlines could be facing potentially huge claims.
And secondly, families may not sue Malaysia Airlines under any country's local law. Could you elaborate? I mean, Chinese local law or Australian local tort or negligence. Could you tell me more?
Well, the Montreal Convention, I mean, does allow for the claims to be brought in a country where the tickets were bought or where the victim was ordinarily resident, okay? So if they, for example, if they bought in China or some other country, they can actually bring the action in that country or where they actually live or where they stay. But the problem with that scenario is that some of these countries, I mean, for example, China, if you were to bring a lawsuit in China against Malaysian Airlines, even if you were to succeed in your lawsuit, it's a question of whether that judgment in China can be enforced against Malaysian Airlines, which is actually a company based in Malaysia, because there's no reciprocal recognition and of enforcement. So that is not to say that you can't do it. You can, but it's a little bit impractical, and it's better actually if you were to just bring it in, bring the legal action in the country where what we call as a defendant, or in this case would be the airlines, is actually located and where they have their assets.
That's interesting you spoke about where you buy the tickets. I mean, now you have online transactions. What happens to the Montreal Convention?
Well, They would actually have to, I mean, people will still need to take a bit of legal advice on things like that. Many would assume that they can just sue in, because, you know, understandably, different jurisdictions with different laws may offer different levels of compensation. For example, in Europe or in the US, the kind of compensation one would expect the courts to award there would be much higher than, say, in Malaysia. So, you know, the victims may well be advised, or they may be attracted with that proposition to actually go and sue there. But then the question is also enforcement, you see. Can they actually enforce it in this country? That is a factor that they need to look into as well, and that's something they need to take advice from local lawyers.
But your conclusion is that it's best to bring a legal suit if the next of kin actually want to, in the defendant country, which is Malaysia.
Yes.
Okay. I understand the legal issues will be slightly different for the families of passengers from Holland, Indonesia, Russia and Taiwan, because these nations have not adopted the Montreal Convention. So where does that leave them?
Even though those countries have not adopted the Montreal Convention, the application of the convention itself doesn't depend on where they live or where they have actually boarded the flight or... and things like that. It's really a question of the Montreal Convention actually governs the contract terms. I mean, it is against in Malaysia. So in effect, it comes back to just being practical and bringing the suit within the jurisdiction where the airlines is actually based. So in that sense, it is not really a factor.
So if it was a Dutch airline or an Indonesian airline or a Russian airline and it was a Malaysian on board, then it would be a problem. It will not fall under the Montreal Convention.
It depends. I mean, those countries, if they didn't... because even those countries who didn't adopt the Montreal Convention, they would adopt a similar convention. Like previously, they had the Warsaw Convention. The compensation and all would be similar as well. You know, the Montreal is just a more updated version.
Okay, hence the 1999.
Yes.
So what compensation will the victims' families likely receive?
At the very minimum, I would say $175,000 or thereabouts, as per the convention. They may get some costs, but I think that's as far as I think the very minimum they would be able to get from the courts. Anything more than that, under the circumstances, given that it's still a mystery about the cause of loss and things like that, under the circumstances, it's very much difficult to speculate, you know. Sometimes it's a question of negotiation as well.
Will it be MAS or the insurer who will end up paying out this compensation?
Ultimately, it would be the insurers, yeah.
Okay. Are there time limits for making a claim for compensation?
The Montreal Convention sets a 2-year time limit, and that means that you actually have to bring a suit within 2 years, unless there's been some agreement between the airlines and the victims' families on an extension. But according to the law, it's 2 years from the date when the aircraft was supposed to arrive, which in this case, I believe it was supposed to arrive on the 8th of March, mm-hmm. 2014.
Yeah.
So that would mean that 2 years would be about the 7th or 8th of March of 2016. They actually have to bring a suit.
Okay. And if the plane is ever found, how will that change the legal proceedings?
Well, if the plane is found, I mean, with the passengers alive or...
Okay, let's assume the passengers are not alive.
Well, if the plane is found with the passengers not alive, then it would be the black box and the investigations into the cause would go even deeper. To some extent, that would be still a positive thing in a sense of at least they know what happened, you know.
There's closure.
There's closure on that point. But that will not really change the legal proceedings in a sense. I mean, the death certificates would have been issued and things would have just moved on in terms of the compensation and what needs to follow from there. But of course, if the passengers were alive, not only would that be a wonderful thing, of course, there's going to be 101 1,000 questions there. But they would probably have to go back to court and reverse the decision.
And they'll have to pay it back.
Somebody has to pay it back.
All right. Yeah. So say that crime or terrorism is ultimately found to be the cause of the disappearance. Is the airline still liable?
Well, they would still be liable for that minimum compensation I mentioned earlier, the $175,000 US. But the thing about terrorism is ultimately the burden is on the airlines to prove that they were not negligent or they were not connected in any way to this or encouraged those terror activities. And I'm not saying that is the case or anything like that, but sometimes it also comes down to whether appropriate steps were taken to, safety safeguards or measures that were taken to sort of like prevent this kind of incident. So those things would come under scrutiny, especially as between the insurers and the airlines.
That's quite difficult for the airlines, isn't it? I mean, onus of proof is on the airline then.
Yes, that's true. Because everyone's going to ask, how did the terrorists end up on the airlines in the first place?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Or the crime. Depending on the situation. On Monday, it was reported in the media that discussions are already underway between Australia, China and Malaysia as to whether to call off the hunt for MH370. What will this mean from a legal point of view for the next of kin?
Well, from a legal point of view, I don't think it would make any difference if they call off the hunt because, there's already a declaration for the in terms of the accident. The compensation process can already begin, whether the search is still on or not. So I think the search is more in terms of just trying to show everyone that they're still doing their best to locate the aircraft and get to the bottom of it. But in terms of finding out what actually caused the loss without finding the aircraft and the black box and things like that, that would be a mystery. Yeah. So I highly doubt that this matter will end up in the courts. I there might be one-off cases that may go, but most of it, I think, will be settled, you know.
So there is no legal recourse as far as demanding that the search should continue?
I don't think so, because that is already provided for under international law, and there are progressive steps in terms of search and rescue and accident investigation, and I think they have exhausted those steps already. So I don't think they can actually demand for the search to keep going on indefinitely.
It is a costly effort anyway.
Very much so, yes. Yep.
Jeremy, what would you like us to take away from this whole issue surrounding MH370? What would you like Malaysians to take away from it?
Well, I would say that every avenue should be explored with the airlines to try and settle the matter as amicably as possible. And the last option really is to go to court, you know. And if that can be accomplished, well and good. And if it can't, then, you know, everyone will have their day in court eventually.
Thank you very much for joining me today. Sure. Jeremy Joseph, transport and aviation law expert on legal issues surrounding MH370 on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.